Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, fanatics of all ages. Welcome to another episode of Phillies Therapy, where we got exactly what we wanted, didn't we? We wanted to have a good final homestand. We wanted to go at least 500 against a couple of good teams. Well, guess what? We did. Well, then why does it feel like we just received our present with holes in its wrapping? It's covered in tissue paper. Something about what this team does when we get what we ask of them just doesn't really feel quite right, does it? Anyway, hi there. I'm Paul Boyer. This is Phillies Therapy. The Phillies are still in playoff position as we sit here on Monday morning with the team at 83-69. You know, Matt Gill, the Athletic Philadelphia, there were a couple of opportunities in this series with the Atlanta Braves in particular where the Phillies really seemed like they could have seized a winning series. They could have gone 3-1. Heck, if you really want to stretch it, maybe think that Saturday's game goes a different way, you could think about them being in contention for a sweep, but we'll say 3-1. They let Sunday's game get away. In typical fashion, it was drawn out in the most excruciating way possible with a 2.5-hour rain delay, 3-hour rain delay, only to give it up in extra innings and squander opportunities and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the Phillies are still basically in the same position that they have been in the last few weeks we've been doing this. They are more than a game up for a playoff spot. They're hanging in there. But there are cracks. There are things to, I guess, worry about. But not necessarily be fatalistic about. And Matt, as you get ready for this very, very long season-ending road trip, and possibly beyond, what sticks out to you about the way this homestand wrapped up? And what really feels like, I guess, exposed about this team, or maybe a new learning that we can come away from this Atlanta and Toronto quick hitter to wrap up the home schedule? And what can we look forward to now as the team hits the road and goes out to Wrigley that might help change our minds about whether this team can actually hold on still?
It's a lot of questions.
Yeah, I kind of jumbled those together, didn't I?
I mean, they crossed six more days off the calendar. Like, and I know that,
and that's
like,
what it's down to at this point, right?
Yeah. I mean, I know it doesn't seem like you said it perfectly. Like, they are, like, they're right about where they've been for a while now. And like, if they finish the season where they are right now, they're in the playoffs. And it might not be like the most exciting way to get in, but they're just trying to survive in advance right now. Cross off another day off the calendar, still in postseason position. Do you want to back in? No. Are they going to back in? I don't think so. I mean, there's a great opportunity ahead of them here on this trip. They're going to face two bad teams. They're going to face an Astros team that has zero incentive to win, to try to push their guys. And I don't expect they will. So great opportunity in front of them here. And I thought that was really Kyle Schwarber after the game on Sunday. It was a disappointing loss. It could have been a 4-2 homestand. It could have been a series win against the Braves. There can be a lot of doom and gloom, but I love the way Schwarber looks at it. And he's a guy who has experienced postseason. He's seen a championship. He's seen a lot of different things. He's like, this should be exciting. This should be fun. Like, this is what you play for, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, think about all the guys in that clubhouse who have never experienced what it's like to make the postseason and play in the postseason. And this is what you build your professional career around. Like, you think of and dream of these moments, and here it is right in front of them for the taking. It should be exciting. Like, it should be fun. And I think them going on the road is really good. Like, I think getting away from home, getting away from distractions, get away from maybe like a little bit of the negative energy and sort of the just like so-so vibe at the ballpark, I think it's good. Like, I think it's going to benefit them. Like, go on the road, take care of business, and get in and see what happens. And it begins at Wrigley Field on Tuesday with Zach Wheeler on the mound, and then Aaron Nola is going to pitch after him. They shuffled the rotation, which makes a ton of sense. And actually, it puts them in great position here. Even if they haven't clinched going into Houston, the pitching isn't going to get totally messed up. Now, you want to clinch sooner rather than later.
Sure.
But this is going to be a bizarre situation. I mean, leaving the ballpark yesterday felt so weird to me. I've never had that feeling before. So much is undecided. The Phillies, you know, yesterday leaving, they could have been back. You know, they could be back in now 18 days for NLDS Game 3, or they could be back in April 6, 2023 for the home opener against the Cincinnati Reds. And it was a truly bizarre feeling. And the Phillies packed for a trip that I've never seen a trip like this. I mean, I'm not leaving until tomorrow morning. I'm flying out to Chicago tomorrow morning. I'm trying to savor as much time as I can at home. But I'm going to pack Paul for a trip that, you know, could be 17 days for me. It could be, you know, I'm packing for 48 degrees in Chicago, tropical storm in Washington, 85 degrees in Houston, and then either St. Louis, New York, or Atlanta. And then after that, maybe LA. I've never really seen anything like this, and neither have many of the players. And I think, though, that it's a fun and unique challenge for them. And I don't know. I mean, it's going to be very much, I wrote in The Athletic today, I mean, I think it is a franchise, a franchise altering trip here. I mean, think about if they somehow blow this, which I do not think will. But think about all the ripple effects if they blow it.
Oh boy. Yeah. You're right. You are right. I've been kind of committing to the bit the last few weeks and just trying to really stay up about everything. And there's plenty of reason to stay up. It hasn't been hard, but there is that other side of things. And it's not as if they are so secure in their position that you can at least acknowledge, yeah, okay, right, that specter is hanging out there for sure. Yes, things would be, if you're rooting for chaos out there, if you either A, don't like the Phillies, which thank you for listening, or if you're just, you know, really into things going nuts, you probably want to see this team fall apart. Because if they do, yeah, I can't even picture, I cannot fathom what might happen, not just with moves, either with personnel or with players or anything like that, but just the fan bases, ideas of this team in general might never recover. And I think you brought up an interesting point about getting away from home, which is, it's maybe not exactly what you want to have happen, you know, with your baseball team. And the Phillies, they played well at home throughout the year. You know, they finished above 500, et cetera, et cetera. Even if they fell a little flat these last two games, you know, I by and large, they still played well at home. But I think you're right. There's a feeling that is just sort of hanging out there just beyond, you know, the confines of the park, you know, that darkness on the edge of town sort of thing. Like, it just, they haven't been able to really shake that cloud, that looming specter, that feeling that what could go wrong will go wrong.
Correct.
You know, that's the hard thing to shake, because it's an intangible thing. You can't quantify this feeling. All of us feel it. Look, even me being as positive as I've tried to be, like, it's there. It's there. And you wonder about it. You think about it. You can push it to the side, or you can dwell on it. But it's funny, you know, I'm looking back now, thinking about how they're going to Chicago and remembering and refreshing my memory of when the Cubs came to Philly back in late July and how badly that went. You know, Garrett Stubbs on the mound, David Robertson picking up a win and a save in the series for the Cubs, got swept, outscored big time. It's a completely different, you know, situation.
I thought you were going to say you're thinking about Wrigley Field and you're going to think about Adam Morgan giving up a walk-off homer to Jason Hayward.
Well, yeah, there's the Jason Hayward thing, which spoiled Dylan Cousins' first and I think only Major League home run, which was kind of a bummer.
That's a strong memory you have there. I do not remember that. I just remember the home run.
For the most random crap, you know, yeah, Dylan Cousins, I think he sliced a real low liner to left field or something like that, game, whatever. Anyway, but that's the point, right? Even right now, this dichotomy that we have, we do tend to remember more strongly, maybe it's because they're more dramatic, when things go wrong. And in this case, if things do go wrong, this might be the most dramatic of all. It really might be. And I don't know how you recover from this if it happens.
There is no coming back from this.
Ugly.
There isn't. Like, if they blow this, there's no coming back from it. And again, I don't think they're going to. Like, I think they're in a really good spot. I think they're fine. There's no coming back from this if you blow this. There's not.
So here's the question then. Do they have the gas to make it? Because it looks like, you know, the pitching is they're walking more guys. You know, there's a little bit of focus on how David Robertson is throwing. You know, two of the five starting rotation spots aren't going deep into games and or are piggybacks. So maybe you can say three out of five, although that might be changing with Wheeler sooner than later, you hope. Can they make it? Not just with the rotation too, but with the lineups that they're throwing out there, with, you know, Nick Castellanos potentially coming back during the Chicago series. And will that provide a lift? Do they seem like they have the energy to make it across the finish line here?
I actually thought like the last 2 days of the Braves series were encouraging from a bullpen standpoint. And I know that sounds weird because Sunday the bullpen blew it.
Right.
How about Zach Eflin, Paul?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's pitched four out of the last 6 days. You know, they had the off day today, Monday. I don't think he'll pitch Tuesday. I think I need to back off him a little bit, but okay. He pitched on back-to-back days for the first time in his life, on Saturday and Sunday. And he threw a total of 21 pitches.
He looks strong. He looks strong.
I mean, he looks like he's done this his whole life, this relieving role. And like, he's always been a competitor. Like, when you look at Zach Eflin, you're like, he's always, you know, you're going to get his best effort all the time, you know, when he's out there. And I mean, what a boost this could be to this team. I mean, because what we've been talking about all along, Paul, is that we know there's six best pitchers, right? And we're trying to figure out who else would they trust or use in a three-game wild card series. And clearly, clearly, Zach Eflin is on that list now.
He is now the
seventh guy. Mm. He is the, you know, right there in the bullpen mix in the late innings. Now they need more than seven probably in that three-game series, but seven it's a pretty solid group they have. I mean, I think Aaron Nola and Ranger Suarez's last few outings have been really encouraging. Suarez in particular. I mean, Suarez has been throwing the ball really well. Has really seemed like he's kind of come on over the hump. You know, he had that little stretch there about 3 weeks where he just did not look like himself and would lose his command, you know, just in the middle of games wildly. He seems to have gotten over that and is an important piece for them moving forward. Nola has had a really solid month.
Yeah.
You know, really solid. And he's done everything they could ask. And they flip-flop him now. So Nola's going to pitch on regular rest on Wednesday. And that would allow him to pitch on regular rest in game 160. And I asked Rob Thompson, like, if you've clinched before game 160, which is the first day in Houston, will Nola still pitch? And he said yes. But, you know, it'd probably be like a two-inning or three-inning start, right, if they've already clinched. Because they don't want him to go, you know, too long between outings. So it's essentially like a glorified bullpen session if he pitches two innings in game 160, and that allows him to pitch game two of the postseason on regular rest as well. So they're in a really good spot with the rotation. You know, would you like to clinch sooner rather than later so Nola doesn't have to throw 100 pitches in game 160, high stress pitches? Yes, of course.
Sure.
You know, of course. But they are at a point where they don't have to pitch anyone on short rest. They don't have to move guys around. Like, they're at a point where the rotation is in a decent spot, even if they, you know, kick this can down the road as long as they want, and they probably will because of the Phillies.
Yep.
The bullpen, on the other hand, man, I mean, you wanna clinch sooner rather than later for the bullpen.
Sure.
Because you really don't want to have to use your guys in Houston. You want to try to give them some rest. You really do. You know, maybe each guy gets one outing, right, in Houston as kind of like a tune-up. And then, hey, buddy, we're going to, you know, get ready to pitch 3 days in a row in that wild card weekend because we might need you. You know, Dominguez, Alvarado, Robertson, Eflin, you know, they haven't, you know, these guys haven't pitched on 3 days straight, you know, all season. Robertson has done it once.
Yeah.
But they're gonna have to in that series, most likely.
Right.
So, you know, one outing for each of you is a tune up in Houston and get ready, you know, because we're about to ride you. That would be ideal. Are they going to clinch it before Houston? I don't know. I think they get it done in DC, but you know, we they're the Phillies. We don't know. And you know, we're looking for those other guys to step up. Brad Hand's, you know, probably done for the season. Funny, right? I mean, they spent $22 million on three veteran relievers before the season, and they're probably going to carry none of them into the playoffs. Knebel, yep. Familia, Hand. Mm-hmm. And they got to do better this offseason in spending that money. And
they do. Yep.
The idea was great. You know, find three guys on one-year deals. Yeah. You know, guys that you like for certain reasons, you know, whatever your evaluation process is, and see what happens. Roll the dice. If you hit on two out of three, great. One out of three, okay. Zero out of three,
yeah.
And like,
not so great.
Not great. Those investments could have been better. You know, Dave Dombrowski has never been great at building a bullpen. It's always kind of been his blind spot. But think about that. I mean, here we are, 10 games left in the season, and you know the three guys they spent $22 million on are not in the picture at all. And still they have a bullpen that is mostly functional. And mostly functional. And that's a credit to Jose Alvarado, who's been one of the best relievers in baseball for the last 2-3 months.
Yeah.
Dominguez, you know, I thought his outing over the weekend was really encouraging. Like it looked better. You know, back-to-back games, Saturday and Sunday, better command. You know, only 31 pitches total in those two games.
Yeah.
Really, really solid. Looked better. Chris Devensky, I think, is going to get some spots here. He's on the roster now. He signed a minor league contract right before September 1st, so he is postseason eligible. He's interesting because he had Tommy John surgery June 2nd, 2021. And he got back to the major leagues with Arizona near the end of July 2022. He was only like 13 months removed from Tommy John.
That's quick. Yep.
And I talked to him for a little bit yesterday, and he's like, I just wasn't ready. And like, I could feel my arm coming back as soon as I got DFA'd. And in the minor leagues, the reports were really good. And not just the numbers, like the reports on his stuff were really good. And look, he's always been known for that changeup. He's right-handed. He does well against lefties, and right now, Paul, they have one lefty in the bullpen, and that's Alvarado, and you're not going to use him in like a left on left like matchup spot because he's one of your best relievers, and like you need him for the end of the game. So Devensky, I think on this road trip is going to get some big spots, especially if there's a patch of lefties. Like he's going to get some big spots, and who knows? I mean, the guy's pitching a ton of playoff games. He was once traded for Brett Myers, which is a weird you know claim to Philly's past.
That's right.
He was a player to be named later when Houston traded Brett Myers to the White Sox. Years ago. So who knows, but do they have enough? I don't know. There's only one more Kyle Gibson start this year. Like that's probably a good thing. You know, they have this doubleheader coming up, you know, tropical storm pending. You know, who knows? The weekend in DC is going to be insane. I mean, if the forecast holds, it could be really interesting. I don't know how they would play these games if it's raining the entire weekend. There's no room to reschedule them. It's kind of a mess, potentially a mess. They want Syndergaard to start one of those doubleheader games. They also want Syndergaard to back up Wheeler Tuesday night and Wrigley in the opener. Now, if Wheeler pitches, you know, is efficient and gets to six innings, maybe they just save Syndergaard. And that's an option. Like Syndergaard, if he doesn't pitch Tuesday night, you'll probably see him in the bullpen late in the game, throwing in the bullpen just like as a heavy bullpen, like a side session. Yeah, because then he's going to pitch one of those games Saturday in DC. Now, even if he pitches Tuesday night and pitches like two innings in relief, he's still going to start Saturday on 3 days rest. And it'll probably be, you know, again, a shorter start, maybe like 3 or 4 innings. They've talked to him about it. He's okay with it. He's never really done this. They don't have many other options. Man. They'll get a 29th man for that doubleheader. You know, hint, hint, Chris Sanchez.
I was going to say.
So maybe Sanchez comes in behind Syndergaard, right? Syndergaard goes through the lineup once, 9 batters, and then Sanchez comes in after him, 9 batters. Again, you know, you get to this point in the year and you're just trying to figure out, maybe they clinch it in the first game of that doubleheader and nothing matters in the second game of the doubleheader and everyone is just hungover and playing drunk. I don't know. But it is a split doubleheader, so there'll be a lot of time between games to drink. So I don't know. How crazy would that be, right? They would have to probably not celebrate until after the second game, right?
Maybe. I don't know. Like... That's a good question. I would be very interested in seeing how everybody comes out for that second game. That's how it goes. I the doubleheader portion of this being right in the middle of what's remaining is really
peak weirdness, right?
Yeah, man. It's really got the wheels turning because I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, so we have the three games in Chicago, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, roll on into Washington. The doubleheader is Saturday. And then there are four games left. So like you were saying, Kyle Gibson expected to make one of those doubleheader starts would not have a full rest schedule ahead for the potential game 162 that he would otherwise be lined up for if all of these games were spread out.
No. Falter starts 162.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Not that you could really, could you put Kyle Gibson out there if that game mattered anyway?
Oh my God, no.
Like what? Are we at the point where we would really have to have that conversation?
No.
I mean, the hope might. Yeah. Yeah. So let's leave that. That's a real early look at what we might be talking about this time.
Game 162 is probably like, I mean, my God. I mean, if 162 matters, you know, you're looking at Wheeler for like an inning or two on short rest.
Oh, man.
You know, you're throwing Syndergaard, Falter, every, you know, Gibson, you're throwing everything at it. You're just trying to, yeah, I don't know.
You just
it better not get, if it gets there, that's terrible things have happened.
Oh boy. You know, there's a very small part of me that gets like morbidly excited at the thought of all the ways this should just go spectacularly wrong. There are so many ways that this could be weird. And as we know, this team doesn't exactly take its foot off the gas when it has the chance to be weird. You know, you look at this. We have the 10-game road trip. We have a doubleheader right in the middle of it. We have an interleague series that was pushed back to the very end of the year because of the lockout that now might hold the postseason fate of this team in its hands. We have a pitching situation where every time a starter takes the mound, it's like necessary for them to get six complete innings minimum, almost, except in cases where we know it's going to be thrown together and cobbled together just because but also, the bullpen has been used so much.
But this speaks to, I think, them in a short series, like their best pitchers are doing okay right now. They're in good shape.
Yes.
And that's why you look at, like, it's all the holes in the middle, right? Like, you know, the rest of the season, they have 10 games left, and how many are going to be started by Wheeler, Nolan, Suarez, it's going to be six,
mm-hmm.
right? 6 out of 10. And you feel good in those games.
Yes.
If you have to, you know, if they matter, especially those Houston games. But it's the other games where you're like, oh man, like how are they getting through these games? And it's a great question because I don't know how they're getting through those games started by Falter, Gibson, Syndergaard in one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But those guys aren't starting games in the playoffs. And once you get to the playoffs, like,
right,
you feel kind of good about what they have right now, especially right. with Eflin back there. You do. Like, you kind of feel like in a short series, you're like, man, like, steal one of the first two games with Nolan Wheeler on the mound. And I don't know. Like, it looks okay. And then all of a sudden, we go to Dodger Stadium and Kyle Gibson starting game one of the NLDS. Right?
I guess so. I mean, but that's... Yeah, that echoes something that we've been talking about for a while now, that yes, it's a top heavy team, but it is a little bit more equipped to actually reach the playoffs than these previous versions. And that's the whole key, right? You get there and then you need the stars to show up,
especially in these really
short series.
Yeah. And I think now that begins now, you know, it's been great that they've gotten contributions from up and down this roster. Younger guys have come up. Minor league guys on minor league deals that come up and contributed. Mm-hmm. Guess what? There's 10 games left. This is the highest payroll in club history. It is time for their best players to be good, to ride. You know, they need to ride their stars. The stars need to step up here, period. I mean, and I think if you look at it, it was a good weekend then in that case. Schwarber, Hoskins, and Harper had better Saturdays and Sundays, Harper especially. You know, mm-hmm. The at-bats looked better. Schwarber had two more homers on Sunday. Hoskins has a bunch of extra base hits over the weekend. They need to carry this team. Like, it's been great that they've gotten these unexpected contributions. It's time, though. You know, they built this team around these high paid players, these stars. Nick Castellanos is probably going to come back either Tuesday or Wednesday. He's going to hit today at Wrigley. They got some time on the field for him on the off day. It's an unusual situation. You know, like he didn't want a minor league rehab. He's never gone on a minor league rehab assignment in his career. This is only the third time he's been on the injured list in his career. He was adamant that he not play in the minor leagues. And I guess the guy really hates Syracuse, New York, because that is where Lehigh Iron Pigs are this week. That's not why, but he just doesn't think it's necessary. And that's his right. The Phillies wanted him to go on a rehab assignment. Rob Thompson was pretty open about it. And Castellanos didn't want to. And in the end, Rob said it was, you know, we all were on the same page. We all agree. I don't think that's the case, but that's okay. Castellanos is going to come back. It might be Tuesday, might be Wednesday. It depends on how he feels today when he hits Wrigley in an empty Wrigley field. He's not going to play every day when he comes back. And that'll be like a conditioning thing. Because again, he didn't go on a rehab. He hasn't played for a while. And I remember, I mean, he barely played. He hasn't played for almost a month now. I mean, because he had the turf toe thing,
right?
You know, that kept him out of the whole Diamondback series right at the end of August. And he came back for like one or two games in San Francisco. I forget how many exactly, but he really hasn't played very much at all in the last month. And so they also really like what the guys have done in right field. You know, the three kind of three-headed monster of Yearling, Maton, and Guthrie.
That's been great, man. Yeah.
And Guthrie will stick on the roster. You know, I think Munoz would be the guy who goes down when Castellanos is activated.
Okay.
And, you know, I think those guys have earned the right to get some playing time every now and then if there's a good matchup for them. And they're not, you know, they owe it to Castellanos. Like, they need to see, right? I mean, they signed him for $100 million. And when he's Nick Castellanos, capital N, capital C, like, you know, he's a really important piece of a lineup. Maybe going back to Wrigley, you know, where he had a great half season, you know, sort of energizes him. I don't know. They have to see, though, because it was, yeah, he actually had a better August, you know, before he got hurt.
Yeah.
It wasn't great, but it was better.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, getting him, you know, how would you feel? Like, let's say he has a great last week and has a really solid playoffs. Like, how do you feel about him at the end of the season? Do you forget about everything else?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do for the most part. I think the interesting thing about Castellanos and that whole situation is that there are a lot of guys now who have been playing right field. not just this month, but just in general. There have been a lot of guys out in right field. And some of them have taken to it pretty well, some of them have not. Castellanos has, I'll say, not right now. But a lot can change in a short amount of time, especially as it relates to, I'll call it hero ball. If there's a moment where Castellanos comes in and delivers a big hit, puts together really good at bat, or if we really want to get weird, makes a great play in the outfield, save a couple of runs. Hey, you never know. That could change some things. It would, at the very least, help get to the offseason feeling a little bit better about the whole thing. Now, I'm sure they've got decisions to make with who backs him up in right field or what the situation looks like with who they would carry on the bench. I think they're going
to be way more aggressive with defense, with late game replacement with him.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm talking to like seventh inning.
Yeah.
Like, he's coming out of the game.
The Pat Burrell situation just in right field.
Yes.
Which is great. I mean, that's why you have these guys on a roster, right? That's the way you want to build a roster for moments like this, where you can supplement the areas that are a little bit weaker when you need to. And that is a weaker, and Nick Castellanos' defense is a weaker area. But now they have a bench and they have the deeper parts of the roster where they can actually make up for that later in games, where hopefully the reason that he's in the lineup has produced a lead for them to defend. There you go. Yeah. That's if everything goes according to plan. Has everything gone according to plan?
No.
Not a lot of times.
No.
But I like the position they're in, not just standings-wise, but on the offensive side. They're not, like, rolling over, you know, even though they lost a couple of games to the Braves on Saturday, Sunday. They didn't give up when things looked like they could have gotten out of hand, especially Saturday. They tried to claw their way back in it. They were maybe a foot away from tying the game. you know, Sunday Brandon was Marsh what it was.
To wear his sunglasses.
Yeah, you know, and but they still clawed it. They clawed a run back in the bottom half. They almost, you know, they almost came back there too. Like they didn't. A lot of that's on JT, who's just embodying every bit of life and charisma on the field right now that this team needs. But they're not rolling over, and you can't count them out. You know, that was the moment I thought things were a little bit different with this team, and I think it arrived around the time of the Angels series in June. It sort of clicks in that you can't write this team off from any game that they're in, because they've won ugly, sure, but they've also found ways to really make it feel like, yeah, they are still in this. Or, hey, wow, it's only a two-run game. It's only a three-run game. You know, it hasn't felt as insurmountable as it has in previous years, when those small deficits just seemed like they were the end of the game, you know, almost feeling helpless when they were down a couple of runs. So that's good. And that's something you can't really quantify. But a lot of that is a credit to those younger guys that you're talking about when they've come up and they've delivered some of these big hits and these big moments. You know, that goes back to when Bryson Stott, I think, started to at the very, very beginning of I guess, breaking out of his early season slump, started putting together some big hits. And then had a nice stretch up before this most recent offer. You know, it's soothing in a way to feel like, even though those deficits are going to come, and it's not like they're going to lead wire to wire in all of these games coming down the stretch here, it's nice to feel like when they are down, that it truly isn't over until they've recorded that 27th out.
I agree. And I think the season completely changed Wednesday night against Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Phillies do not win that game, I don't know what we're talking about today. Mm. I feel like we're talking about a team that is either tied or behind the Brewers. I think the season, maybe I'm just being too hyperbolic here. I think the season was saved that night. I really do. I mean, if they don't win that game and you've lost six in a row and the Braves are coming in, man, like I've talked to guys in there who don't want to, like, they don't want to come out and say nobody's panicking, but they were like, man, that was a big win. Like, man, we needed that. Like, they really needed that. And it started with a Real Muto home run, a solo shot, and it just kind of gave them a little energy, and it was huge. And man, winning that game was it saved the season. I really do believe that.
I can buy into that. I can absolutely buy into that. Look, you've lost five straight. You've started a big homestand against two really good teams by getting embarrassed. Really, that's what that was.
18-11.
Yeah, like that's. And if you follow that up with another lifeless loss through seven plus innings of that game, they continue to look bad. It's not like that whole game they were calling it. It didn't look good. No. Something just happened. Something clicked. Maybe they all finally realized that there is this sense of urgency after Guerrero hit that home run, you know, practically back to, you know, almost onto the scoreboard bleachers. You look at that and you're like, oh my God, here we go again. You can't help but feel like, wow, they really are just going to let it slip, aren't they? But tying back into what we were just saying a minute ago, there is that little sliver that they've earned, that little benefit of the doubt from the way they had been playing, that you couldn't fully rule them out of that game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some part of hope in me was still alive in that game. And I get it's easy for me to say, and it flies in the face of, you know, the doomsaying and the way the majority of us were feeling at that moment after Guerrero homered, but you couldn't count them out. You felt like there was still a chance, that there was still just this little thing that could happen that could keep them in. And lo and behold, they string together a nice little rally and get a couple of runs with two outs even to prolong it. Or maybe it was just the one. Either way, the tying run score with two out. And then eventually they get to the 10th inning and Matt Vierling hits a 50-foot chop. And there you go. Losing streak broke. They come back in and they take the next two from Atlanta, including a 1-0 game that I never thought they were going to win.
Great game.
I just – look, when that was 1-0 from the second inning on. And if you had all the faith in the world, even I, as the most optimistic person in this bit right now, if you thought that score was going to stay 1-0 for that whole game, you should have bet on it and retired and not have to worry about the rest of what's going on. Because I think, what was it, the last time they did that to Atlanta, Aaron Harang was the pitcher, something like that.
Aaron Harang and Ken Giles combined.
Aaron Harang and Ken Giles. Look.
That was your tidbit. You pulled that.
It was. Thank you. There's so much about the way they're doing things that remains unusual, that remains weird. Even if it's just like a one-nothing win in the box, or you think, oh, okay, that game was probably pretty tight. Oh, well. No, it's the feeling around all of it. It's just every little macro bit finds its way into each of these games to microcosmically encapsulate all of this. Thank you.
Can we go back one last exercise here about trusting pitchers?
Yes.
Rank these pitchers in order of most trusted to least trusted for you right now. Man.
Okay.
I'll give you four names.
Four names. Okay.
No, I'm going to give you five names.
Five names. Oh, okay.
Syndergaard, Falter, Gibson, Nelson, Brogdon.
Wow.
And I'm not saying a starting role, just any role. Like, let's say you just need three outs. Rank those guys in order of most trusted to least trusted.
Right now I'll go in reverse order just to build suspense.
Okay. Least trusted.
Least trusted right now is Kyle Gibson. Okay. I look, stuff velocity wise, got the swing and miss, you know, in this Atlanta game. Okay. Yeah. He, something about the command and he's missing pitches in bad spots at bad times. And that's something that could be corrected by coaching. He's a veteran. You kind of hope that there's something that they can turn around pretty quickly, or at least maybe adjust either in game calling or what have you, that would help him avoid that. But the way he's throwing the ball right now and has all month, it's hard to trust that. I think fourth would probably be Noah Syndergaard, just because he's allowing too much contact. And in today's game, with guys hitting the ball as hard as they do, just upping the odds of somebody smoking one or stringing a couple hits together leaves me feeling pretty bad. Third would be Nick Nelson. I like the fact that Nelson hasn't really allowed a ton of, you know, like hard contact. He gives up a couple of doubles every now and then, but he's only let up, I think, the one home run. The walks can be a little iffy. I still don't love him being in the middle of this pack, and I think there's a gap between him and the next two. Number two would be Bailey Falter for me. I think when he is right, there is something very calming about the way he throws, because even though his stuff isn't overwhelming, it just induces a lot of bad contact, or it just confuses the hitters.
So you've got him on the playoff roster.
Yes. I think, you know, I mean, was again, going back to
come up, you have to come up with 13 names. So yeah,
Right. And so number one would be Connor Brogdon, just because I've always loved the stuff, and his last outing really had me feeling good, even though it was in a blowout. Really liked the way he was positioning things. He's got some of the best raw stuff in the whole bullpen. Obviously Alvarado beats him, but I just have always loved Connor Brogdon's fastball changeup combo. So that's the way I would go. Bailey Falter, the playoff roster thing is interesting to me, and I actually
They have a need for left. You know, they only have one left-handed reliever right now. So yeah, Falter's on, but it's like, let's say it's the sixth inning, and there's two lefties due up, and the Phillies have a one-run lead. Do you want Chris Devensky or Connor Brogdon or Bailey Falter? I don't know. I mean,
yeah, it's an open-ended question, but I think the reason I was so gun-shy about including Brad Hand on the playoff roster anyway, even before he got hurt, I wasn't really on board with that idea. I get the idea that you need, I won't even say need, that you'd like to have multiple, you know, left-handed options. I get that, but boy, Brad Hand just wasn't doing it for me this whole year. It just, he couldn't ever seem to get over the hump where he had consecutive outings or three straight outings where it really seemed like he was in control, that he was throwing his slider where guys couldn't touch it and they were still swinging over it, that they weren't picking things up. The walks were up, the strikeouts were down. It didn't work for me. And what I kept leaning back on was, okay, you probably have one of Falter or Suarez in the bullpen anyway, depending on when you were thinking about this, and it seemed like Ranger might not have been in the rotation. You probably have one of Falter or Suarez in there anyway. But if you have to fall back, me liking Connor Brogdon stuff the way I do, he has stuff that could play against lefties. He has the changeup that can fall away and a bit of cut on the fastball that can run in. It's not ideal. It's not what you necessarily would go to first. But if Alvarado is exhausted, as in just used, in the game, and you can't bring him out for that spot, I would have felt better about bringing, you know, a Connor Brogdon who was right and throwing right than Brad Hand. Look, pitcher handedness to me only matters if it actually gives the guy an advantage in that platoon. And Brad Hand wasn't getting that advantage.
No.
You know, like, and Brogdon and even Nick Nelson had better numbers against lefties this year than Brad Hand did. So it's not just about what they throw with. It's about how they get the guys out. And Brogdon, to me, has the stuff to handle lefties, okay? He's not your first option, no. But he's more trustworthy for me than Brad Hand was. That right now, it's a moot point. But I think that just goes back to thinking about how they need to be thinking about assembling this roster. It's less about, you know, handedness, whether it's a throwing hand or a batting hand, and how they might match up, because every single out in this short series is going to be important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking at some of the numbers against the Cardinals, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Eflin has like great career numbers against Nolan Arenado.
Okay.
And you maybe see him come in the middle of a game, and he's got really good numbers against Goldschmidt too. Like that.
Interesting.
Those guys be batting back to back, and Eflin's got great career numbers against both of them.
Interesting.
Like really, really good. I'm talking Goldschmidt is 2-for-12 with 4 strikeouts. It's just 2 singles against Eflin, and Arenado is 4-for-17 with 2 doubles, no walks, 2 strikeouts.
Interesting.
Eflin, you know, if they face the Cardinals, Eflin's going to be facing Arenado and Goldschmidt.
Sure sounds like it, and I'd be okay with that. I mean, those matchups aside.
I can tell you who doesn't want to face the Braves, and he hasn't said this to me. I'm just like, I'm just, you know, kind of making this up. But like, I don't think Kyle Schwarber ever wants to see Dylan Lee again.
yeah, I don't either. Honestly,
Dylan Lee is nasty. Like I feel like every time they've played the Braves, Schwarber is now 2-for-9 against Dylan Lee this year, and that's a left-handed reliever. 9 at bats against a left-handed reliever in one season. Lee has it's 4 more at bats than Lee has faced any other hitter this year. 2-for-9. He's got a home run, but 3 strikeouts, and that most of the at bats have just looked, you know, really just unfair.
So we saw him in half the games, man. Yeah, I'd be sick of
half the games. Yeah, 9 out of 18 games Kyle Schwarber faced Dylan Lee, a lefty reliever. That's amazing. I don't know, you know,
who do you trust most out of that group? Like what is the sense of, you know, where
I
want to
see a little
here?
More Syndergaard here.
Okay.
Like, I was kind of intrigued by like the 2 innings he gave them against the Blue Jays, which is the best lineup he's faced all year. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been facing just terrible, terrible teams for the majority of this year. A bunch of Red Starts, Marlins, Nationals, like the Pirates. They've really done a good job of hiding him, right? Protecting him. Kind of want to see a little more of him as a reliever. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued.
Are you?
I don't know. I like the idea of him in shorter bursts than I do him starting.
Well, that's fair. Yeah.
Nick Nelson, like yesterday, like had a really good inning, you know, and it was kind of under the radar. I mean, like the rain delay ends and they need someone to pitch the 6th because they didn't have Brogdon. They didn't want to use Devensky there in his first day with the team. And Nelson came in through like a 9-pitch 6th inning and it was terrific. And it got them, you know, to the Alvarado, you know, Robertson, Dominguez bridge. And obviously that didn't play out the way they wanted it to, but it got them there.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I don't trust any of them. That's my short of it. I don't trust Brogdon. I don't trust Connor Brogdon.
Yeah. I mean, it's fair. It's recency that's pushing them up for me. Like, yes, I've had the lingering, I like this guy thing going on here. And it's a small bit of outings, you know, lately that's kind of helped propel him up for me. But when he first came back from the injured list, yeah, he didn't look right. I think it's fair not to.
There's
fully
7
trust
pitchers on their roster that I would trust right now, and it's not enough.
No.
And some of these guys, the other guys, are gonna have to in the next 10 days are really gonna have to prove something. You know, Bilotti, just not as good as it was, and he's a solid middle reliever. That's what he is, and he's been thrown into bigger spots than that. And when he has, it hasn't always gone well. Yeah, some of these guys could step up. I mean, they need Bailey Falter to really give him a good start Friday in DC. The last one wasn't very good against a good Braves team. And I wonder, you know, like the Braves, his last two starts have been against the Braves. The first one in Atlanta was really solid. And it was the first time the Braves had ever faced him. And there was something to, they didn't see him last year. They hadn't seen him this year. There is something to Falter about seeing him the first time. He's difficult to pick up. He's different. Fastball kind of jumps on you a little bit because of that extension. Then the second time you see him, it typically goes worse for him. And we saw that with the Atlanta situation. So, you know, if they do face the Cardinals, they haven't seen Falter a lot. Like, that's a nice weapon to have. But he is limited. He's a fifth starter, like a fifth or sixth starter. He is limited.
On a slightly lighter note, just to change topics and think about this for a second, I want to go back to JT because he's been a pretty consistent bright spot now ever since the forced rest of the Road Toronto series. And he is on the cusp of being the first 2020 catcher since Pudge Rodriguez.
What does he need? Two more steals?
At the end of the 90s. He's got two more steals. He's got 18. And I'm just looking at Pudge's numbers right here. Do you know Pudge had 47 stolen base attempts? He was caught 12 times. Anyway, sorry, 37. He stole 25, caught 12, homered 35 times. That would be the second time ever, or at least as far as play index will let me go. So back to 1900.
Ever. Yep.
And he hasn't been caught. How is he going to be perceived in? And I'll just use this one particular topic. How is he going to be perceived in MVP voting? Because he's not the winner. You get that. But the way he has completely turned his season around, not just to a pretty good level, but to potentially do something a catcher has only ever done one other time in a season. Well, again, seeming to get stronger as the year has gone on. How is this going to be written about, talked about, viewed? I'll think just in terms of awards right now, but like what historical context can we ascribe to this situation right now?
Here's my favorite JT stat, and there's a lot of them, but he has caught 108 and two thirds innings more than the next closest catcher.
It's 11 entire games, roughly.
108 innings.
12 games. That's
12 games. He has caught the equivalent of 12 more games than the next closest catcher. It is unbelievable. Like, that is insane. And while shouldering that load, that workload, he has putting up a historical season. As you mentioned, he could be the second 2020 man catcher in baseball history. How will he be perceived in MVP voting? Probably not as high as he should be. I do think voters like have an appreciation for the demands on a modern catcher, and also, you know, we'll reward him for that workload, for, you know, going above and beyond and performing at such a high level while playing, you know, more than any other catcher in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Seventh, eighth, I don't know. Is that where he finishes? Eighth?
Okay.
I don't know all the guys in front of him. I mean, I have to look closer at you know, all the players in front of him, but somewhere around there, right? Is that fair? Eighth?
Yeah, that sounds fair.
Fangraphs WAR, he's sixth. I know overall. That's just one way of measuring. Yeah, sixth overall in the National League. amazing season he's had.
Really. Right. We're getting to the point now where like the leaders, the clubhouse leaders, so to speak, in these awards. You know, I'm guessing Paul Goldschmidt in the NL and
I think Manny
Aaron Judge in the AL. Felt like it's been locked in for a long time.
I know.
And we're kind of forgetting about, you know, what some of these other guys are doing.
Yeah. Machado has had a great season.
Yes.
Really had a great season.
He's really turned it on out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, things are not all doom and gloom.
What's your number? Like, how many wins do the Phillies need?
My number,
you know mine. Like, I've been steadfast in this. Like, 88 is my number, and I'm sticking to it. Like, I think they just need 5-5 down the stretch here, and maybe it won't be pretty. You know, maybe it's a tie situation where they're 88-88 and they get in because they have the tiebreaker. But I think 88's enough. I don't think the Brewers get the 88.
Yeah, I'll say one more, just because I think they're capable of winning six out of these last 10, even with the likelihood it feels like they drop two of three in Houston, no matter who Houston's throwing at them at that point. Just feels like it. Because they have been beating up on bad teams. Because they need to feel the urgency of the situation without pressing too much. You know, it's funny. Just a brief tangent. Last week, I wanted to see Gene Segura be the guy this past week. And he, instead of channeling some of that energy that you can tell he still has into like more production, it seemed like he's just pressing badly. Yeah, he was taking some bad swings. He didn't have a good week. But that's the kind of thing they need to feel and channel properly. And I think it could result in 6 out of 10. So I'll say 89.
I'm not saying I don't think they're going to win more than five. I'm just saying, right. Like, what does it take to get in? Like, I think it just needs 88.
Right, right, right.
I think they can win six on this trip. I think they win seven on this trip. They're playing bad teams, and the Astros have literally no incentive. They'll you know, their starting pitchers will go two innings or something as a tune up. Like, they literally have no incentive. They're playing, you know, the last thing they want is somebody to get hurt.
Sure, sure. I completely get that. I think the Cards are still, you know, favoring the Phillies right now. I'm worried about Milwaukee making it matter with this Miami series that they have, because they have the two with the Cardinals, and if they're still within, you know, if they're still within a game and a half by the time that Miami series rolls around, then the Phillies are playing the Nationals. They're both playing bad teams, but something about those four gamers just has a strange feeling to me. Maybe it's the doubleheader in the middle of the Washington series that makes me feel like something could go awry there, or that would be the start of something strange. I have my eye on October 1st. I'll just put it that way.
Where are we October 1st? What's that?
Is that that's Easter? Saturday. That's Washington.
Oh, that's Washington.
Sorry. That's Washington.
I don't even know the dates anymore.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's the doubleheader. So I'm talking about the doubleheader. Gotcha. They play the two games. Milwaukee will be playing their third game against Miami. I feel like Milwaukee takes those games, three of them at least, and continues to make it interesting. So I would really like to see 89.
They're going to get Alcantara. Yeah, they're going to get Alcantara, who's pitching for a Cy Young. He's highly motivated.
I get that. I get that. Yeah. But also his last start of the year, are they really going to push him that hard?
They
might.
No, they will, I think, because they want him to win Cy Young. Trust me. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that could be the one. That's a good candidate for one to drop. But I don't know, man.
Cy Young. Like, they've been like having an aggressive campaign with the writers. The team has, the Marlins.
That's interesting.
Yeah. They'll push him. They want him to win.
Okay.
He wants to win.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, good for him. He's had a fantastic year. He deserves to win.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want 89. I think 89 is the number. And I think Milwaukee is going to continue to make us sweat it out a little bit. I hope they prove me wrong. That's all I got right now. Like, I just have to hope that they do fall apart. I do. That's what we're at right now. Because the Phillies have some work to do, but they need that help. They could use that help. They don't need that help. They're not trailing.
Can't wait to see what happens in between now and the next time we talk.
Again, I feel like this is how we end every episode. We're like, oh boy, what's it going to be like this time next week?
I mean, this is the first time since 1967 that they're finishing with like a 10 game trip on the road. And that 1967 team was irrelevant. The stakes weren't, you know, nearly as high as they are for this series and for this trip. And, I don't know. Like, I'm fascinated to see how these guys handle it, how this trip unfolds. There's just so much to it. I mean, we didn't even talk about, you know, the manager's fate. I mean, I feel like if you know, rightly or wrongly, Rob Thompson's future is tied to this trip. I mean, if they don't get in, if they collapse, if they somehow don't get in, I don't know. Like, he's probably not back, which doesn't seem fair, but. Man, I don't know. I can't wait to see how this trip goes. I can't wait to see how heavy my suitcase is when I bring it to the airport tomorrow morning. Probably gonna pack a second bag to bring with me because I don't know what I'm packing for, and this is going to be crazy. So
we got a few things riding on this road trip, not least of which is Matt's baggage fees.
Athletic will be paying an extra bag.
Get that New York Times expense money. Another week down, week and a half left to go. This is it. This is what these guys get paid for. And we'll see how the mood is this time next week. So for the Athletic Philadelphia's Matt Gelb, once again, I am Paul Boyer. Thanks so much for listening. Go Phils. Here we go. Hold on tight.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.